Three, two, one. Happy New Year from our friends over at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming have you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. So join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com and use the promo code Sullivan20 for 20% off plus free shipping. Let us have a toast for a new year, new you, and a new you with no pubes. To complete the set, Manscaped threw in the Shed travel bag and anti-chafing boxers as free gifts to give to you to keep all your goodies stored nice and comfortably to go along with the Performance Package 4.0. Inside that Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the signature Lawnmower 4.0, the advanced skin-safe technology, reduces cuts and nicks on your delicate part. It also comes equipped with a 4000K LED spotlight that will shine a light to the promised land 2023 looks to be. Cheers to new balls in 2023. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Sullivan20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use that promo code Sullivan20. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me, of course, the star of the show, the former WWE and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
Great. Did you mean to say the Dance Master?
Yes, yes. Love it. So what's going on, Kevin? I know you were talking about, before we got on air, you're talking about current WWE, Roman versus Cody. Do you think that that's a WrestleMania main event, or what do you think about your old feuds, your old nemesis son?
I think that's a main event, but we talked about this last week. What do you do in that? You know, it's great to be able to book things, but you better be able to book a finish. You know what I mean? Who do you go with on this one? And is Roman wrestling on both nights?
No, not as far as I know. I don't think so.
Okay. Nobody is, right?
No, not that I know of. I don't think so.
Okay. So they'll probably be on the first night or second, would you believe?
Second night, main event.
Okay. Boy, when you come out of this, you better have the right thing done. And I'm sure, as smart as they are, Hunter's done a magnificent job. They must be having all kinds of test market shares done to see who the people want, what they want. I mean, this is to me, this is one of the biggest WrestleManias they have ever had. Since Hunter's taken over, things have fallen into place really well, right?
Yep.
Ratings are up. The show seems to be much more solid. a lot of smart things. A lot of guys. That Sami Zayn really impresses me, man. I mean, I saw him the angle where he was throwing punches on when he took Roman down. Yep. Those punches, whoa, brother, and the ferocity of it. So they've gotten everything back together. I hope they don't do, and I don't think they will. I hope they don't paint themselves in a corner and say, oh, we're going to work some kind of fluky finish. I hope to God they don't do that. And they better be careful who they go with here. I don't think you can make a mistake, but I'm wondering if you don't put Cody over, will it be harder for him to get over on the next time? Or if you put Roman over, will the people be pissed about him continuing to win? They're in a very, very precarious position in my mind here, but I'm sure, as smart as they all are, they'll come up with something really good.
So I was thinking, like, should Cody win? Should Roman continue his streak and you know, continue on with 900-plus days as champion? I wonder what direction they can go in on this one.
Yeah, that's what I asked you. What do you think they'll do, JP?
I don't have a weird feeling Cody's going to win, because I feel like his destiny is to win the title. But I don't know. I feel like, to me, though, I think Cody's going to win, but I would have Roman win somehow, some way. I don't know. I just don't want him to drop the title. I wouldn't have him drop the title for a while. It's like it's like Hogan in the 80s. Have him hold the title for, you know, 4 years or whatever, you know, 1,500 days. Have him hold it for a long time.
I mean, didn't Bruno at one time hold it 5 years or 6 years, the first
one? The first one was either 7 or 8 years, and the second time he held it, I think, was for 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
He had two really long title runs. Yep.
I mean, the first one, like you said, 7 or 8 years. Think about that. And think about how, you know, we always talk about the smart guys and the business and great bookers or producers, whatever you want to call them today. Think about how smart Senior was, and I've said this to you many occasions. 8 year run with the same guy, and they drew for 8 years.
Yep.
Think, and they were going back to the same towns, the big ones, once every 3 weeks.
Crazy. Yep.
And you got the same guy on top for 8 years. I don't think you could do it today, for
definitely
sure.
No, definitely not. But it's funny, they tried years later with Backlund. He almost equaled that title run. I know he comes up like a year or two short, but I mean, his technical reign was like almost like 2,400 days. So, I mean, it was crazy. I know technically he loses to Inoki, so there's like a break in there in the Valentine controversy, but it was like he definitely tried it again with Backlund. It was like, didn't really work as good. He should have kept the title probably on Superstar Billy Graham.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. The difference was Bruno was drawing, and the card was drawing, but Bruno was carrying most of the weight. No disrespect to Bob, but they brought a lot of people in to support him. Superstar Billy Graham, Dusty. Who?
Snuka.
Snuka, the Giant, a bunch of people, you know what I mean? They had great tag teams back in the day, Guerrilla and Dean Ho. I mean, they had some, they've stacked the cards pretty well with Bruno. And it was a different time, a different era. A lot more, towns were a lot more parochial then. And maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think the ethnicity today is like it used to be back in the day. I mean, when I was growing up in Boston, East Boston was Italians. South Boston was only for the South Boston Irish. I don't care if you're Irish. You weren't getting into South Boston hanging around long unless you were related. And Bruno brought that ethnicity. into the Northeast, which was probably the last bastion of ethnicity for boxing and wrestling. Do you think, JP?
Yeah, because that was like, oh, the Italians, oh, you know, the Spanish, like, yeah, very, very much like whatever ethnic group. And then obviously New York, full of Italians. They love their Bruno Sammartino. Yeah, for sure.
Right. And the other thing is, I would be betting that Bruno was the last guy on top that gave some of his interviews in Italian. Think I'm right?
Definitely. Guaranteed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think about that today, that if a guy gave an Italian interview.
Oh, yeah. No.
No.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's funny. Like, if you look at it, it's like, okay, Bruno had that run. I don't think it'll be ever touched. No, I mean, no one's ever touched that. Backlund had that huge run. Obviously, Hogan, Pedro Morales, even in there, had a nice long run. But every week on TV, Michael Cole mentions those four guys. And he says, Roman Reigns is approaching them. Roman, does that mean anything? I mean, he's just doing that for historical, or is he teasing something that he's going to be, you know, breaking Hogan and Pedro Morales and all these guys' records?
Well, he certainly has something to play on. I certainly isn't going to do Bruno's thing, but, you know, it gives, and it's nice, subconsciously, maybe he's throwing advertising out for the network. If you're a young kid and you hear that a bunch of times, maybe you want to go back and see who Bruno was. Maybe you want to go back and see who Pedro was. Superstar Billy Graham. So I think it's a great thing to feed off of, don't you?
I would be great if the fans would go back and learn their history, study their history, and follow up on some of these guys. I just love that Reigns' name is getting like tossed around with those guys, because it just makes the title more prestigious and just makes it sound like, oh shit, wow, he's getting into Hogan territory. Holy crap, like, this guy must be really good. This guy must be a god. Yeah.
And he's doing an amazing, here's what I find funny. Him and The Rock's career run parallel. Both are biracial, right?
Yep.
Both got booed out of the building as baby faces.
Yep.
Both became some of the strongest drawing cards in the history of the WWE.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Think about that. They were Rocky Sucks and Die Roman Die, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now, you know, one's the biggest star in Hollywood. The other one's got a long reign, and it probably may last for another year. Who knows? But, I mean, it's pretty amazing where they came from, huh?
Pretty crazy that Vince was like dead set that he loved these guys. He just didn't have them in the right position. Now they're, you know, obviously became and put themselves in the right position, though, for sure.
And you know what's going to happen with Roman. He's going to become a huge babyface when the time comes. So, I mean, again, this goes back to WrestleMania. You got a guy that's been your flagship for so long, creeping up on that sacred territory about how long you're a champion, and knowing he has a same kind of run as a babyface. You better be very careful in this finish.
Very true. Very, very true. So let's get to the topic at hand. It is Super Brawl 4, a.k.a. WCW Super Brawl 1994, which was on February 20th, Albany, Georgia, at the Albany Civic Center. The attendance, 7,600 people. Not bad. The tagline, there is no escape from the revenge and rage in the Thunder Cage. Pay-per-view buy rate, only 110,000. The big main event, of course, Ric Flair versus Vader in the Thunder Cage. Now, we were talking about this a little bit before we got on. Technically, you weren't here at this point, But at the end of January, about a month before this, you and Dave Sullivan had a couple tag matches on WCW Pro. You even had a one-on-one match against a job guy named Sonny Rogers. You beat Scott D'Amore, who's running Impact Wrestling. You beat Pez Watley. So you were kind of there in 1994, but then you leave for a few months. You do ECW, excuse me. You do Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and then you come back in March. What was the issue with did you not have a contract? Were you busy elsewhere? I know you were technically in Japan too at one point. So
right.
what was your thought process in 94? Because you were kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I was working mostly in Japan, and I didn't have on a nightly deal at all those places you mentioned, even WCW. The other places, you know, they didn't care about the Japanese deal, but during that period, they weren't happy with guys that had contracts to Japan. They wanted them to give them up. That was the start of that. And for their ideas, it was just dumb luck that they thought that. I mean, it wasn't until Eric got there that said, hey, we got to choose a side here, because at that time there was a bunch of companies and they were all doing well in Japan. So that's what happened.
Yes, it's just funny. Like, it's like, wow, okay, he's in WCW. Nah, not really. He's in ECW. Well, not really. He's, you know, he's wrestling there a lot, but never really. You know, you'll show up in Smoky Mountain. And then finally, in March of 94, really towards the end of March 94, you go back to WCW. Is that one of those things where they want you to be a writer, you know, part of the creative team, and then like a wrestler, or you're a wrestler first and then they put you on the creative team?
I was a wrestler first. Yeah. I was a wrestler first. And, it was like, I kind of liked the position I was in when I was working all those places. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
And I still had the Japanese thing and I didn't want to give that up because, Victor Quiñones and I were good friends. And Victor was running, you know, Wings at that time. So I was working with them.
When you look at it, though, you were saying, "May WCW kind of doesn't want you working elsewhere." Is that Bischoff, like, wanting you to come in and be exclusive, or is that Dusty?
No, that wasn't. That was, I believe, Eric had taken, no, heard. Was,
yeah, 94, Eric's the boss.
Eric's boss then, yeah. Eric called me and, no, that's not the truth. Who called me was Flair. And I think it was because Mike Graham had him call me. Mike Graham was in the office. Greg Gagne was in the office. Flair, technically, I don't think it was him, but he had all that influence. And Rick called me because Rick and I got along. And we went through a long period of negotiations before it kind of worked out.
I don't know if I've ever asked you, what did you think about Greg Gagne? Were you friendly with him, friends, or no?
I didn't know Greg that well. I met him maybe a couple of times. I either met him a couple of times when they came to Atlanta, when I was in Atlanta, or he came down to Florida, or him and Vern came to a show in Tampa. But I didn't know him per se, you know what I mean?
What about Mike Graham? Were you guys always friends throughout the years? Did you stay, like you said, he told you to call. Like, did you stay in constant contact with Mike?
Yeah, Mike and I were very close, yeah. Yeah.
What did he say about WCW? Because like I'm saying, like, so 110,000, it's okay. I know Flair's back. It's kind of okay. Like, was he saying that they needed something? Like, what was his opinion of WCW at that point, 94?
Mike?
Yep.
I think Mike thought, they knew they were behind. And I think, Mike, came from Eddie's loins, so he knew what was right, what was wrong. But I think he knew until they got someone like, which they did, Eric, as the president of the company, it wasn't going to ever settle down because they had a lot of guys before. Kip Fry, can't remember the, there was another guy. Do you know who in between Kip Fry and Jim Herd? Do you remember that guy?
Ooh, I don't remember. I used to know all these guys offhand. When I would do interview stuff, I'd always say, oh, what about this guy? This guy. Oh, I forget. Yeah, there's another guy, though. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he was really, really, he had no idea what he was doing, but he thought he did. And he had the authority to do it. So Mike knew if they could maybe tread water with the guys they had in the office, and I think Dusty was coming in then, too. That maybe they could stay afloat, but Mike was a realist. He knew they couldn't do it unless they got somebody like Eric.
So WCW in 94, I know this is kind of before you get in, but that summer Hogan comes in. Is there any sort of talk of Hogan, or is there any thought of Hogan in 94 early on in WCW?
I never heard of any of it, but then when we went to Disney, I started to hear rumblings, you know what I mean? Because he was filming Thunder in Paradise down there at Disney.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, guys started to put one and one together and get three, you know. But it certainly made it easier to go talk to Hulk, you know what I mean? And yep. I remember one time he came over to Disney to say hello to the guys.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was in the afternoon. He was filming there too later on in the day. So he just came from his sound stage to our sound stage. I think I was to meet Eric, truthfully.
Maybe plant some seeds. Maybe he's interested. Hey, you know, I can make some money here. You know, I still got a few years left in me. Yeah, definitely.
I don't think he needed to plant them hard because, you know, Hulk was Hulk at the time, and he still is. But, you know, he was over, and he had severed ties with Vince. So I think that was everybody's dream. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Wow.
It is funny, though, that, like, Hulk is just kind of, like, slowly, not pushing the envelope, but slowly, like, hey, what's up, guys? Like, everybody knows who he is, so it's not like, you know, what are you doing here? It's just like, oh, Hulk's here. Hey, Hulk, you know what I mean? Slowly seeping his way in there.
Yeah, and, I think that worked out for WCW. It definitely worked out for Hulk. It worked out for Eric. It worked out for WCW. But it also worked out for Vince because he had ridden Hulk as far as he could. And I don't think that they would have thought about turning him heel because of the merchandise.
Hmm. Yep.
So, and it made them get younger guys that hadn't been seen for 10 years or 8 years on top.
Yep. So for this show, it's interesting in the fact that it's going to be the Vader Flair rematch from Starrcade 93, where Flair beat Vader in his big swan, like not swan song, but his big return to WWE's big return to the main event, really, of Starrcade. The whole storyline was kind of continuing on Clash of the Champions, Sting and Flair versus Vader and Rick Rude. Vader then injures Ricky Steamboat, who, because Flair's a babyface here, would kind of continue on. And basically, they would have the match signed for Super Brawl. Nick Bockwinkel goes, I don't know, but we might delay this match. Then Vader injured Steamboat, who's Flair's buddy. And Flair's like, no way are we postponing this match. He just injured my best friend. I want to continue on. So that's kind of where we are as far as starting with this pay-per-view and starting the card. Do you like Flair as a babyface going up against the monster heel Vader?
Well, by this time, because Rick was so over, the people, 50% or 60% were cheering for Rick. It was only in hardcore wrestling towns that his opponent would get most of the cheers, you know what I mean? Yep. And against Vader, of course, it was in Charlotte, right?
This show's in Georgia. Yep.
Georgia? Okay.
Oh, but Starrcade was, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're in the Deep South. They're against the monster. Yeah. It made sense for Rick to be a babyface.
So it's interesting to note that it's now called the Thunder Cage. It used to be the Thunder Dome Cage. I don't know if you would know this or not know this. Did Mad Max threaten to sue that you're using Thunderdome? You know what I mean?
I'm sure. And I also thought, when you just brought it up, was that a Turner movie, produced movie?
Ooh, I don't know. I'm not sure. I know Dusty loved those movies because he'd always talk about like that Mad Max quotes and stuff like the match beyond and stuff like that. He loved Mad Max. I know that.
For some reason, and I'm probably dead wrong, I have this thing in my head saying that was a New Line Cinema movie.
I'm not sure off the top of my head. I'm not sure. But it's funny because it was called the Thunderdome at one point, and then now it's the Thunder Cage. So right. Could have been an issue with legal, or maybe they said, hey, maybe not, let's not call it something that's owned by somebody else.
Maybe, but I'm sure that had some kind of influence in it.
Yep. The first matchup on the pay-per-view, Harlem Heat, a.k.a. Kane and Cole at this point. They weren't Stevie Ray and Booker T as of yet, as far as a name. Versus Thunder and Lightning. Harlem Heat wins in about 10 minutes. Okay, opening match, I guess. Nothing great. Nothing really to write home about here. But I don't know. It's one of the things where it's like you're trying to get Harlem Heat over, but Thunder and Lightning, who was pretty much Cobra, was Thunder here, a.k.a. the fake Sting, Jeff Farmer, as a young guy. Do you like that opening up a card with kind of like maybe a green tag team against an established tag team? Do you like opening the card that way?
No, I like to open the card with some guys that can really perform and not belittling these guys. They were, like you said, they were very green. And I think you should open up the show with technically the best match that you can put together.
Because to me, it's like, okay, Thunder and Lightning, I know these guys. They were, you know, kind of like Saturday Night guys, job guys, glorified enhancement. That's who you're opening the card with? I know you maybe give Kane and Cole, a.k.a. Harlem Heat, here a win. But to me, like, really? Pay-per-view level? First match in the pay-per-view? I don't know. I didn't really particularly care for that booking because it's like, this isn't Saturday Night or Worldwide here. This is pay-per-view.
I think you're right there. I mean, you know. I don't understand that, why they did, but that wasn't my job, and it was not my job to ask questions either.
So they go to the back after the win, and Mean Gene is back there, and he's going to attempt to get an interview with Flair. Then they tell him that Vader's locker room is kind of being guarded by the cops because they don't want Vader to get to Flair before the match. So they're kind of teasing like a lot of commotion and a lot of stuff going on backstage, that there's so much heat between these two guys that there's cops around and one's guarding Vader's locker room. You got cops guarding Flair's. They don't want these two to get to each other. And Bobby Heenan just makes a joke like, what is this, an episode of Cops? Hell's going on here?
Bobby was so witty, wasn't he?
Oh, the funniest. Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, I've watched some Bobby and Gorilla stuff. I appreciate it more now than I did back then. They played very well off of one another.
He was absolutely the best. It's funny, a lot of people say in WCW he kind of wasn't as motivated, maybe towards the end of his run, but here in the, you know, the early night, mid-90s here, I thought he was great.
Yeah, I did too. I always thought he was excellent. I mean, I've heard that statement before too, that at the end he wasn't as enthusiastic as he was before. I'm not sure if I go along with that, though.
They always say the rumors, or Mark Madden maybe have started that, oh, he was always drunk, or he's always drinking before and during the show. Is that true about Bobby the Brain? Was he drinking a lot during the shows?
You know, I never saw Bobby incapacitated that he couldn't do his job. Now, drinking, if he was drinking, he was drinking, he was flaunting it.
Hiding it, yeah.
Yeah, so there were some guys that would have a cocktail before the show.
Well, he wasn't wrestling, right? I mean, so right, it's not like the end of the world there. Right, he's going to have a drink, right?
Right, right. You know, so I always thought whatever Bobby did to get ready, he was always prepared, and he always was witty, and he always knew the storylines. Because, you know, I would watch Bobby before I got in a bit of helping with the book or anything. Bobby would always go and ask the announcers, and he would ask the creative people what the storylines were and where they're going, and Bobby would follow them, and he would help out the storylines. I thought Bobby was a real asset.
So next up, we have Jungle Jim Steele defeating the Equalizer in 6 minutes and 30 seconds. Not a great match here. I don't know if you remember Jungle Jim Steele. I guess you could kind of say it was like an Ultimate Warrior-type gimmick, but almost like a Jimmy Superfly Snuka, almost like the Renegade, pre-Renegade. Like, what do you think about Jungle Jim Steele?
I thought he had a lot of potential. He was the muscular. He was probably 6'2", 250, muscular, had the long hair, and he had a lot of potential, I thought. Didn't he end up going to Japan and having a good run there?
Yes, yes. Very good.
Yeah, yep. He had a great run there. And I happen to like him personally, too.
Really nice guy. I interviewed him. I want to say maybe 2 years ago or so. I did a good interview with him and was kind of going over with him. I guess he's in like the nursing field now, or you know, something with the world of helping people. But it was like we were talking about. I was like almost his body and his look, and he was kind of green at this point. But 3 years later, you got or not 3 years, 1 year later, really, you guys have the Renegade coming. I was like, you should have been the Renegade because you were a little bit more experienced than he was, and you looked better, like physically. Like, I don't know, was that ever a thought? Like, hey, maybe Jungle Jim Steele can come back and play the Renegade.
No, he wouldn't have come back to play the Renegade because they were trying to imitate that the Renegade was Warrior, right?
Yep. So the look wouldn't be there.
What?
Wouldn't have the look as Warrior. The Renegade looked more like him, yeah.
Yeah, and Hogan wanted to get the win back, so he wasn't going to take a chance. And, you know, I talked to Jim when he went to Japan. So he must have had a 5 or 6, 7 year run there, didn't he, JP?
I don't remember how many. It was more than a few years. He was there for a long time, constantly booked over there. Yeah,
right. And he was with New Japan, not All Japan, right?
All Japan, yep.
All Japan,
yep. As far as I remember, yeah.
Then he jumped to New Japan at the end. I know there was that he was really desired over there. Been good for him.
I know he did have a good run in All Japan.
Right.
Oh, he was in both. Okay, yeah. So he was. Yeah. He kind of went back and forth. He was in All Japan for a while, then New Japan. Okay, and then back to All Japan. So yeah, he spent quite a time in Japan, but he worked for both, primarily right. All Japan for a while, many many years of All Japan.
Yep. And then I think. I believe they started to work with one another. You know what I mean? They actually had, you know, interpromotional matches in the Tokyo Dome. And I think that broke the ice with them. That I think they started to they were smart enough to know that if they had a drawing card, rather than not let him jump to ship from ship to ship, it was good for their business in Japan, you know, because it would make a guy fresh that was over in Japan that left all Japan and went to New Japan and vice versa.
So really, as soon as he leaves in 94, he loses in the summer to Honky Tonk Man. He leaves and goes to All Japan from 94 to almost all the end of 2002. Then 2002, 2003, 2004, he's in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Then 04, he goes back to All Japan for a year. So, man, he spent almost 9 years in All Japan Pro Wrestling. Holy crap. Wow. Amazing. Wow. I don't remember that from interviewing him. I know he said he spent some time there. I didn't realize it was that long. Wow.
And it was nine years in All Japan.
And about 3 years in New Japan, yeah.
So he's there 12 years? Wow.
Crazy.
That's a great run, huh?
Yep. Or just about 11 years, when I'm adding it up. Yeah, just about 11 years. Pretty crazy, though. As soon as he leaves WCW, All Japan scoops him up, like, within an instant.
That's great. Good for him.
So the next match up, we have Terry Taylor. Terry Taylor is going to defeat Diamond Dallas Page with the Diamond Doll in about 12 minutes. Another long match. Okay match, nothing great. But it's funny. It's like, should that be a pay-per-view match? Should the Harlem Heat be a pay-per-view match? Should Jim Steele beating the Equalizer be a pay-per-view match? Doesn't scream pay-per-view level matches that they're putting on here.
I really can't comment on that because I don't know how much they had invested in these guys. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I don't know if they're coming off of angles or they're pushing guys. And I'm with you, not knowing the background, which is a very important thing, I think, and not knowing where they were going with these guys, is kind of hard to judge. But to me, it looks like not much more to start off than a regular Saturday night 605. You think I'm wrong there or right?
No, for sure. Yeah. Definitely. And then we have an interview with Ricky Steamboat with Nick Bockwinkel and Mean Gene talking about how Ricky Steamboat is the number one contender. He's saying that Flair promised him a shot. He's also talking about how basically no matter who wins, he thinks he deserves a shot and should be number one contender. And Nick Bockwinkel kind of just cements that. So I guess it was just one of the things, you got to get Steamboat on the show just to kind of pump him up and pump up the fact that he could be the number one contender for the title no matter who wins.
Yeah, I think so. And just having Ricky on the show enhances the show.
They also have an announcer named Oliveri Muffler, who is the German announced team part of WCW. And Mean Gene has something to say with him talking about WCW's international division. But I don't know, I just thought it was funny. It's like, why did they really need to bring out him other than to say they have this German tour? Do you really need the announcer, Oliveri Muffler, coming out saying, you know, pumping up the tour? Could Mean Gene could have just done that by himself?
Well, let me ask you this. Was the commentator from Germany a tall guy, kind of balding,
full head of hair, looks young, almost has like that Joker face to him. He has a weird smile, about the same height as Mean Gene.
Okay, I was thinking when we went to Germany, there was a local promoter there that used to bring us in, or he had something to do with bringing us in, or his company, or he was the front man for the company. And he liked to be noticed, so I thought maybe that was the reason. Okay.
Hey, in that upcoming German tour, that is the infamous tour, or the European tour, really the German tour, but European tour, where Vader will, you know, kind of, not really on purpose, but Mick Foley will lose an ear, let's just say, on that tour coming up. So that'll be an interesting tour coming up for WCW.
Right.
So then we have Johnny B. Badd defeating Jimmy Garvin with Michael Hayes in a singles match. Match goes about 11 minutes. Okay match here. It was actually Michael Hayes is getting a bit of a fill-in with Jimmy Garvin here, as he had recently turned on Johnny B. Badd and was kind of basically faking an injury to avoid wrestling Johnny B. Badd. But what do you think here? Johnny B. Badd Jimmy Garvin, 11 minutes. I don't know. To me, not a great match. Seemed a little bit long to me. I know it's a pay-per-view, but it could have been shorter.
Yeah. But now, JP, you've given time up to two kind of either the team was green or the individual was green, right? Mm-hmm. And now you got which way do you go? You know what I mean? Do you put less time in on guys that can perform a little bit better? I don't know the situation. To me, and again, this is no knock, it was the guy was built ass backwards. You know what I mean?
What do you mean?
Like I said, the first match should have been a great technical match, right?
Yep. Yep.
So if you had the green guys, then you could put them on the second match and they wouldn't have to go the 11 to 12 minutes that they were allotted. You know what I mean? You yes. could make that match a real fast moving match, stop them, get heat, big comeback, and go home. You could have camouflaged the guys a little bit better, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, because here with Johnny B. Bay, it's like he's still kind of coming into his own. I know it's 94, but he's still kind of coming into his own. And Jimmy Garvin is kind of, you know, knocking off the rust here, so to speak. Like, he wasn't like a regular wrestler in 94, really. So, I don't know, kind of just a weird match to give it 11 minutes. And then Hayes reveals at the end, after B-Bad wins, that he really wasn't hurt, and he beats up B-Bad after the match. So, I know they're trying to build up Hayes and B-Bad, but to me, just it didn't work.
Yeah, and I think it's what you said. I think Johnny was still very green. This might have been, and I don't know because I wasn't there earlier, this might have been his first angle, right? Did he have any others before this?
Oh, good point. This might really be like his first major angle with like a major right. guy, yeah.
Yep. So he really does. He's in unknown territory. Sometimes the guys on the other end don't take in consideration that factor because they've done it so many times, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So, and it's a whole different mindset when you get the first angle with somebody that means something.
They cut to the back. Vader is trying to go nuts, I guess. Mean Gene's trying to get an interview with him. Harley Race and Vader saying no interviews. He's throwing around chairs. He's just making a lot of noise. And really, you're just being a nut kind of in the back. And Mean Gene is playing it off like, okay, no interviews. Vader's too nuts right now. Can't interview him.
I thought that Holly fit with Vader tremendously. Tremendously.
Oh, perfect. Yep. I agree.
The respect of being the champion, and his interviews were maybe not flamboyant, but they were certainly solid and gave the attitude that he was a tough guy, but he also could hold his own with anybody. And it helped Vader because I didn't like Vader's interviews, really. To me, it was like a Saturday Night Live parody of wrestling.
Hmm. Yep. So then the next matchup, Lord Steven Regal with Sir William. So obviously that's William Regal with Sir William, who was actually Bill Dundee there, defeats Arn Anderson in a singles match defending his WCW Television Championship. The match goes 29 minutes and 55 seconds, almost does the 30-minute time limit draw, but Regal is just able to escape with a win there. Funny, I thought they were going for the draw. When you kind of watch it back, you think that's what they're going for, but they do not. Regal gets the win. It's an okay match. It almost could have been a little bit better. I guess some people would complain they didn't like the style. It might have been too slow. I liked the match. It was pretty good. Really kind of picks up towards the end. But to me, maybe a little too long, 30 minutes for the pay-per-view. What do you think here? Regal defeats Arn in almost 30 minutes.
Well, you got two workhorses, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, these people that talk about, it's a different type match. They kind of work English style, right?
Yep. Yep.
Unless you want to sit and watch and pay attention, you're not going to be turned on by it. But those two guys were great performers. I mean, Arn and Regal. But if you're trying to kind of say in 30 minutes and you think they're going through and then they don't go through, technically, I'm sure it was the best thing you've seen so far, right?
Yes, I think so, yes.
Okay, so you're making up for some of the drag you got in the early part of the show.
Yep. Then it's going to get a little crazy as Cactus Jack and Max Payne will defeat the Nasty Boys, Knobs and Sags, by disqualification. So the Nasty Boys retain their WWE Cruiserweight Championship. The match goes 12 minutes, 30 seconds. This is my favorite match so far. This was very good. I don't know. For some reason, you combine either you or Max Payne with Cactus Jack, and then you throw the Nasty Boys in the mix. I'm always entertained. They're always awesome to me. I don't know. The Nasty Boys are great, but Cactus Jack and Max Payne get the win by a DQ here. They do not win the tag titles. Nasty Boys do retain. I know you love those guys.
And the other thing is, this is where you can see that Knobs is a jellyfish. Do you remember when Max Payne suplexed him?
Oh, yeah. I think he really hurt him, didn't he?
His feet hit the mat, and his knees blackened his eyes. Go back and watch that, JP.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Everybody, Arn, who's one of the most witty guys I've ever met in and outside of the wrestling business, said, that proves that Brian is a jellyfish. If he had any bones in his body, they would have been broken. Oh, I want you to watch that bump. I mean, it's the truth. I don't know how he didn't break his neck.
Crazy. He's a jellyfish, like you said, yeah.
Yeah.
They cut to the back, and Flair's with Mean Gene, and Steamboat is there, kind of rooting him on, basically kind of teasing a big fight between Flair and Steamboat, which will happen 2 months after this at Spring Stampede 94, and they're going to have a classic, maybe not just as good as the 89 matches, but almost just as good. I love the 94 matches as well between Flair and Steamboat, so they're kind of teasing something between those two, which is always basically going to be a home run. So good tease there with Flair and Steamboat in the back.
Yeah, it was.
Then we have part of the double main event, a Thunder Cage match, a six-man Thunder Cage match. It'll be Sting, Brian Pillman, and Dustin Rhodes defeating Steve Austin, Paul Orndorff, and Ravishing Rick Rude. Of course, they were with Colonel Robert Parker. That match goes about 15 minutes. This is excellent. This is now, talking about the match before this being great, this was even better. This was awesome. Chaotic, fun, using the cage in spots. Just interesting, just the way that the cage is. It's kind of an opening on the top of it, but it's almost like Hell in a Cell, but without like the top part of it. So it's an interesting, interesting match, interesting cage that they have set up. You can't really get up and over it because of the way it's angled, but just really great match, great six man. Sting, Pillman, Rhodes, Austin, Rude, and Orndorff. Can't go wrong with those six.
No, you can't. No, you can't. I mean, and if I can remember, didn't the cage slant up?
Yes, it has a weird angle towards
yeah,
it. Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
You know why that is? Is that to say nobody can get in, nobody can get out, but without having it enclosed?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
Like, why is it that angle? It's like the cage is weird.
I think it was just how it was designed. And I don't think, there are a lot of times that things go out and you think, well, this can't be messed up. But unless somebody's there that knows design, if you're giving it to a company that's never built a cage for wrestling, they're on their own, right?
Yep.
I'm surprised that, the Hell in the Cell cages that weren't built that way long ago by mistake.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if you go to a cage, if you go to a fencing company and tell them you want a cage, why didn't they put a cage on top? I could see that happening first time and people seeing, oh, God, we got to take the top off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yep.
Because if you don't follow through with this, mistakes can be made pretty easily. If you give somebody a job to do who's never done that job, they're going to perceive it in their own head, even if you give them a sketch. And back then, in those days, not many people sketched out what a cage looked like.
Yep.
So I think that might have been just Maybe they lucked out and said that's how it was built to keep people from coming in and getting out. Maybe that was a good deal. Maybe it was designed that way.
So next up is another Thunder Cage. It'll be Ric Flair versus Vader with the Boss, a.k.a. the Big Boss Man, as the special guest referee. Do you like having two cage matches in a row? I know Dusty used to do that back in the day sometimes with the U.S. title and the world title, or, you know, maybe even Anderson's brother cage match, and then the Flair in the main event in the cage match. Do you like having two cage matches instead of just one?
No, I don't. First of all, the cage match is a very difficult thing to work to make it exciting. And you end up doing the same spots in each match. You got the cage in there, you're going to use the cage, they're going to reverse the bad guy trying to run the good guy into the cage, the good guy reverses it. It starts to become repetitious. And it limits sometimes very strongly guys that can really work their eyes off because of the cage. It limits some movement. So I like it when it's built up right, but there's no need, out of my thought process, I mean, there's no need to have two cages, and you take away the specialists of a cage match, if there's two of them. Cage matches are supposed to be built up. The guy's been running, or there's been interference or whatever. If you have two of them, to me, it says you're doing the same thing with two different sets of people, or a tag match and a singles match. I don't like it, period.
So then, as we're talking about the main event, this other cage match, Ric Flair will defeat Vader via submission. Of course, Harley Race is out there as well. He wins the match in about 11 minutes, 30 seconds here. The thing is that I like about this match is obviously there's great storytelling. There's good violence. Flair is, you know, that ultimate babyface, and Vader's the killer who wants to end Flair's career. But then you got the Boss there, who's obviously kind of, you know, he's just an impartial referee, but it almost seems like a way out for Vader. He says that Flair wins by a submission. Vader says he didn't submit. So they're kind of throwing that little tease, which would be the next feud for Vader. Him and the Boss, a.k.a. Boss Man, are going to feud next. So it almost gives Vader an out. Do you like that? And having Boss there as a referee? Because if you think about it, if you see Vader and Flair in a cage, Vader should be able to kill this guy. You know, yeah. Despite, you know, all the odds are against Rick, Flair wins. They're kind of building up Boss versus Vader too. Like, hey, I didn't really submit there.
Yeah, and you also bring two great big man workers together. I like the idea how what they did there. I mean, Big Boss Man to me was one of the greatest performers his size I've ever seen. His footwork was incredible.
The crowd is really into it. I mean, they're rabid for this. They're loving Flair. They're hating Vader. I mean, they're doing good stuff. Arn is out there. Steamboat is out there. They're trying to enter the cage because Harley Race is kind of cheating, and there's handcuffs involved and things like that. So there's some other chicanery going involved, but it's really all predicated around, well, Vader's doing whatever he can to win. He's going to use Harley Race if he can. He's going to, you know, cheat. He's going to do whatever he can. But then Flair, on the other hand, he's going to choke him, bite him. I mean, he's fighting for his life here. He's got to survive against this big monster of Vader. So it was good. It was almost like the Boss was like the conscience of, like, I can't let him kill this guy. But also then, you know, Flair fights back. He's like, you know, he's like the little engine that could, the David versus Goliath, if you will, and he ends up getting the win via submission. But Vader has the out, saying that, like, I didn't really kind of submit there. This is bullshit.
You know, I remember when Flair made that comeback from the corner, remember?
Yep.
Where, oh, yeah. Vader had just beaten him to death. And yes. Rich had that slow comeback, started chopping him, punching him, and then made a big comeback. That was done very, very well, that match. And again, you got to give kudos to Vader. Vader was an incredible, for a big worker, I mean, he could do a moonsault. He was very agile, you know, and that led up to some great matches with Boss Man and Vader. You remember how good their matches were?
Oh, yes. Excellent. Yeah.
So that accomplished everything for them.
To me, too, it's one of the things where, because Heenan even says, I never heard Vader say quit. So they're teasing something with Vader and Boss Man, and they're teasing something with Nick Bockwinkel is going to have to be involved, and obviously Steamboat and Flair. So, I mean, they're building up to some pretty good feuds here. I like where they're headed.
I do, too. This one was, like I said, I'm just kind of dropping in here. So I don't know what they've done before, and what they're planning, where they're planning to go. But they put together, I believe, in their heads and in their hearts, this was the best they could do at what they had. And just because you and I disagree with them doesn't mean they were wrong. You know what I mean?
Yep.
There might have been reasons why those matches that we're saying, well, maybe they shouldn't have been on early. There might have been some reasons, time restraints, contracts running out, you know, all kinds of things we have no thought process of.
So to me, like the last four matches were strong. Vader Flair is awesome. The six man with Sting is awesome. The tag match with the Nasty Boys is great. And I even like Lord Steven Regal against Arn Anderson. I know other people may have not. It's too slow. But despite a bad start, I think a good finish to this pay-per-view. What do you think? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle?
Yeah, I give them thumbs up. I mean, because I think they accomplished what they wanted to get across. I think they got the angle with Flair and Vader and then put the heat on Boss Man and Vader, raised the stakes for Steamboat and Rick. You know what I mean? I think they got a lot of things. And then people might not have liked it, but they had a very interesting match with Arn and Regal, and people thought it was going to go Broadway, and there was, what, 29 minutes and 30 seconds or something like that.
Yep.
I think they got a lot accomplished, and they were on the right track, I believe.
Pretty good show, I got to be honest. It starts off, you know, some matches, you're like, yeah, is this WWE Saturday Night, or is this a pay-per-view? And then they definitely picked up the pace, and I mean, really hit a home run with the last two matches in the Thunder Cage, especially Flair retaining the WWE World Heavyweight Championship in the cage. So, I mean, they definitely finished strong.
Yeah, so I got to, you know, and there was probably a lot of inside turmoil there, you know what I mean? Because who was the booker at this period? Was it a committee or was it Rick?
It's the committee, but Rick was supposedly in charge of the committee.
Okay.
So, yeah. The champ's going over. Flair's going over.
Yeah. So I think they did a good job.
So let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. You can follow Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. Kevin, what else do you got going on?
Well, I'm going to go to Nashville for that convention. I'll see you there, right? When is that, March 13th?
Yes, possibly yes.
Yeah, so hopefully I'll see you there. And I'm going to be in Kissimmee, Florida on the 14th of this month. So it's for a signing, so come down and say hello.
Nice. Thank you, Kevin, and thank you everybody out there for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code, Taskmaster, to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy chilling atmosphere after a hard working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code Taskmaster to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer.